Welcome to the Brian Thomas Podcast. In today's podcast, I speak to Killian Hennessy of Killian Paris. Descended from the family that brought the world the Hennessy brand, Killian has established himself as one of the finest noses in the business. In this podcast, we discuss his lineage in luxury, the storytelling inherent in his fragrances, how sustainability is at the core of his brand, and his endeavour to make perfume visible. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Brian Thomas Podcast. Welcome to the Brian Thomas Podcast, Killian Hennessy, how are you?
I'm fantastic. What about you?
I am so good and all the better for chatting to you. It's so lovely to speak to you because, you know, we enjoy your fragrance and now it's nice to meet the man behind Killian Paris. So, Killian, you have links to Ireland and that's what people are going to get very excited about.
I do. I am actually the eighth generation of Hennessy.
Yes. So Hennessy, of that very famous Hennessy cognac that we all know so well. What was it like growing up in a family like that, Killian?
From 0 to 10, I lived in Cognac. Cognac is where all the cognacs actually have to be produced in order to be called cognac. It's what we call in France AOC, Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée. So I grew up in Cognac, in the castle of my grandfather. And at 10, when my parents divorced, I moved to Paris. So it was a quiet life.
Yes. And did you ever see yourself, you know, joining the family business and continuing that tradition?
To be honest, no. I always wanted to build my career outside of the LVMH group. I always wanted to be able to look at myself in the mirror and feel that my career, I did it on my own and not because I was the H of LVMH.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did quite well then. you certainly achieved that goal. Did you learn a lot from the family business, though? I mean, you know, there must have been so much that came through, you know, being witness to, you know, the merger of Louis Vuitton and Hennessy. Did you learn a lot from your grandfather?
But, you know, at Hennessy, the Hennessy family was really the owners, obviously, but the family was really more in charge of the commercial aspects of the cognac. The creation aspect has always been done by a family for generations now, named the Fiu family. So at home, creation was not really part of the conversation. What was part of the conversation was the quality of the product and traveling and developing market and being the first one to open new markets like Japan or China. That was the conversations at home. But funny enough, you are made of your culture. But what really excited me later down the road was the creation aspect of it. And funny enough, this is not something that we talked at home.
Yes. And so you decided to create something in a bottle, but something very different. So scent was the direction you went in, and that's why we all get to enjoy the beautiful fragrances of Killian Paris. What appealed to you about that industry?
Well, you could say it's another alcohol, not one that you drink, one that you put on your skin. Yes. But to be honest, I discovered perfume really by chance. I was writing my thesis in college, during my fifth year in college, on the semantics of scents. And in order to understand what I would be writing about, I did a nose course, so in parallel with my fifth year. But really, in order for me to try to understand why was it so difficult to talk about an odor, a simple perfume, if you want. And I realized that, you know, contrary to colors where you have like three primary colors, black and white, and then all the nuances, or music where you have seven notes of music. In perfume, we have 3,000 notes. Yeah. And they have barbaric names, frankly. Hydroxycitronellal, acetate de citronellyl, acetate de geraniol, acetate de cistropipo. You need to physically put your nose in front of any of those olfactive colors and memorize them, and then start to do your combinations, you know, that green note with jasmine. Oh, that's the accord it creates. A bit like in music, you know. In music, sometimes you listen to a single, you're like, oh, it has a very 70s vibe, right? So yeah. The vibe is this melody. It's exactly what we have in perfume. We have sometimes accords that immediately take you to the 70s, the 80s in perfumery. So you need to understand why, what are those, so you don't make the mistake of creating a copy of a past perfume. So it's 10 years of work. It's simple. It's 10 years of knowledge, of culture, of recreating your what we call it, the ligam, recreating, you know, all your accords and understanding all the perfumes of the market, so you don't make a copy of something that exists.
And I think that's so interesting, you know, the language of scent. Like you say, they have these very, you know, ugly titles that have no match to how they smell. It could be a beautiful scent, but the word is so separate to that. So there's no way for us to realize how something smells until we smell it. Has this improved or has this changed? How have you gone about trying to make people understand how something might smell by the wording?
No, because unless you know the name, then you can. If you have never smelled the color and the name associated, then you it's impossible to have the culture. But you know, you say ugly names, and I found them beautiful. for me, all those colors are gorgeous because they are colors. That's exactly the way I see it. And there's perfumers who only think in terms of color harmonies. I have a perfumer very well known. His name is Alberto Morillas. He has created amazing perfumes like Acqua di Gio for men, like Pleasures for women, CK1. I mean, so many amazing.
Wow. Perfumes.
And for me, he has created the Good Girl Gone Bad, Dark Lord, and Musk Wood. And with him, his formula, he sees it as blocks of colors. So when I talk to him, I need to talk in colors, almost like if I was talking about a painting. So every perfumer has its way of working, and you need to be able to work with all different ways. But you can only do that if you have the culture to talk about it, you know?
Yes.
It's all about the knowledge. Without knowledge, you cannot work in this industry. And that's the drama of this industry that happened in the 80s, 90s, you know, when people from Unilever, Procter & Gamble, all the mass market, you know, the food mass market, when they arrived in the perfume industry, and they resonate perfume like if it was a box of ice cream, a can of ice cream, you know. And perfume is not an ice cream. it's an art. It's much closer to the work of a painter than anything else, or the music of a composer. And there's no, you know, they all, the investments are important, and they all would love to have a way of measuring if it's going to be a success or not. But you cannot tell a painter to create a painting to be a success, or to a composer to compose a music that will be a success. You know, the only thing you can do is create the most beautiful art piece possible that really doesn't resemble anything that existed in the past, and that really brings something interesting into the market. And then you hope that customers, fans will follow you, will like your creation and your creativity. But that's the only thing you can really hope for, because it's a pure creation form, pure art form.
I think that's so amazing, because probably like a lot of people listening, I have perfumes on my shelf and I can enjoy them and enjoy the scent, but really probably don't consider much more than that, much more than it being until I speak with you, considered really that creative process of it being an art form and somebody just making the very best and the most beautiful thing that they can. Let's talk about you and your creation of scent. Where does it start? Because I know storytelling is really important to you when you're creating a scent. So tell me about the process.
Well, for me, everything starts with what I call the script.
Yes.
And in that sense, I feel like my the way I see my job is very close to the way a movie director would work. Yeah. In the sense that for me, there is no great perfume without a great story. The same way there's no great movie without a great script, you know. Every time you see, I don't know, any Oscars, any award ceremony, you know, when they talk about it, the actors will always talk about the script and how well it's written and the story and the emotions behind it. And that's what interests me. It's to create or to exacerbate emotions. The same way music can make you cry, can make you laugh. I think the way I see perfume is with the same intention, the same ambition, which is to provoke an emotion. And the same way a movie director will not cast two actresses for two different scripts. You know, if it's a very romantic movie, a movie director would cast an actress A, but for a very dramatic thriller movie, maybe this actress is not at all the right actress. Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly how I go about choosing the perfumers that are going to work with me on the scent. In order to express good girl gone bad, it's a total different emotion than if I want to express flower of immortality. You know, one is a delicate peach blossom flower. The other one is the scent of a seductress, you know. So yeah. Knowing what I'm trying to achieve, because I know all the perfumers, I know their style. I know the way they like to compose, with which ingredients they like to compose. I choose my perfumers the same way a movie director would choose his actors or actresses.
Okay. And to continue the analogy then, if we were to take Good Girl Gone Bad, is there a person you see when you think of that story, if you were to cast somebody as the Good Girl Gone Bad, do you think of it on that level?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. I know it's funny that people always ask me, who is my muse, who is my muse? But I don't have a muse like in that sense, because my muse is every woman who can be a good girl gone bad. Every woman who, in a way, is the modern Eve, because Good Girl Gone Bad was part of a collection that I call In the Garden of Good and Evil, which was a contemporary metaphor of the Garden of Adam and Eve. And the Good Girl Gone Bad is obviously a metaphor of Eve, the good girl created by God who was tempted by the snake and bit the apple. That's why it's a fruity floral scent, you know, because it's built on a forbidden fruit, accord. So in my mind, it's every woman, you know, who wants to be a good girl that sometimes bites the apple, you know. I knew exactly with which perfumer to work with. And then once I have the accord, right? Because when a perfumer, when I talk with a perfumer and express the story and the emotion I'm trying to convey, then the perfumer brings usually 2, 3, 4, 5 ideas. And the ideas, it's a very small formula, maybe 5, 10, 15 ingredients. And then once I have chosen the accord, which you can compare to the melody of a music, then the real work starts. And from that point on, to finish a perfume can take up to 6 months, 9 months.
That's amazing.
And the way I go about it, the person who said it the best, because that's exactly the way we work in the perfume industry, it's Mozart. Mozart says, I search for little notes that love each other. And that's exactly the way we work in a perfume. Once we have the melody, we need to find notes, little notes, that are going to blend with the original accord. Blend and at the same time bring a color, but a color that blends with the original accord. Sometimes there's a color, you're like, oh, it's good, but it chocks. It creates a contract that it's not welcoming. So it's not right. So, and this is the process. You try things exactly like a cooking. You know, the chef, they try things. They try before they come up with the right combination.
Exactly. And do you know when you reach that combination, is it like, this is it? Do you have a eureka moment that we finally got it? Or, you know, is it, it sounds like such a meticulous process. Is it hard to release it?
No, because it's a slow process and you build it. It's like a puzzle. So little by little, you see your puzzle taking shape. So when you put the final piece to the puzzle, you know it's the final piece.
Yes.
And for some reason, it clicks. I hear a click in my head.
Wow.
And I can't explain. It just clicks.
And then let's talk about it from the consumer point of view. The physiology or the biology of scent, you know, the journey of scent to our brains and our emotions, you know, how do you feel knowing that you can create a scent that, you know, might remind a child of her mother in years to come, or, you know, a man of his lover? You know, it's a very emotive thing.
Yes, but don't forget, I cannot create a scent that is already in people's memories. A perfume needs to live in people's on people, and it's by living on people through days, months, years that it will build memories in people's minds.
Hey, that's true.
So me, I'm just the beginning of a story, you know, the beginning of a memory. I'm just giving the tool to create those memories, but the memories are built by people. And that's the beauty of it, is that at one point, the perfume escape from me. You know, it doesn't belong to me anymore. Once I have released it, it doesn't belong to me anymore. And I truly feel it. I truly feel it that now my perfume will take thousands of lives on its own.
Wow. It sounds, when I talk to you, like there was nothing else you could do, because this is really your passion.
Yes, I actually was very happy because I had no clue what to do. I guess I was waiting for perfume to call me, because nothing turned me on until I discovered perfume.
I mean, I feel envious talking to you, because find something that really, really matters to you so much, and that, you know, you're so evidently passionate about is a real gift, isn't it?
It is, actually. I feel very fortunate, yes.
Yeah. And you make wonderful references to your heritage, you know, that heritage of Hennessy. My favorite being Angel's Share. I just love this concept. Can you tell us a little bit about Angel's Share, what that means in distilling and now in your perfume?
Well, yes. So the Angel's Share is what we call at Hennessy. When you go to the cellars, and the people that make you the visit will tell you that every year they have to refill the barrels, the oak barrels, because there is a percentage of the liquor that evaporates, and then he asks you to look to the ceiling, and you see that the ceilings are dark black, and he says, so this is the evaporation of the liquor, and we call it the share for the angels. So, you know, so as if what evaporating was a gift to the gods.
Love it.
It's interesting, because to make another metaphor, another parallel, perfume, perfumare, from its original meaning, means through the smoke. We used to burn perfumes back then as a communication with the gods through the smoke of the perfume.
Oh.
It was an offering to the gods. So we cannot be closer here from cognac to perfume in the offering to the gods.
Amazing. I mean, that's just beautiful, really. I mean, I love Angel's Share, and that's just another step. You know, it's a lovely story.
Yeah. What's funny, I launched the brand 13 years ago. I launched with six scents. There was a tuberose, a rose, a lavender, and so on. And by the end, usually the journalist would say, I'm very surprised. There's no cognac perfume.
Yeah.
So no Angel's Share. And yeah. There was no angel share back then. It took me 13 years to create that scent. And I guess it was worth it. I think it's our biggest success since the launch of the brand. We never have experienced such a successful launch.
And when you say 13 years, was it 13 years in the making, or was it, you know, after 13 years that it was created? Did you try for that long to create the perfect
air? No, but it's interesting because I work with a new perfumer. And I knew I needed to have someone who didn't know me very well, because one of the keynotes of cognac, and especially the highest quality of cognac, is the cinnamon flavor, the cinnamon facet, right, when you smell a cognac. And for a reason that is, that happened a long time ago, I hate cinnamon in the perfume. So any and every perfumer that knows me well knows that they cannot put cinnamon in a composition. But Angel Share, it's an overdose of cinnamon.
Wow.
But it's done in a way that actually I can wear it very easily, but it has to be done the proper way. But I would have never been able to create Angel Share with my perfumers, the ones that I usually work with, because they know that this keynote is not something I enjoy. So you see, sometimes you have to challenge yourself and have the courage to go into uncharted territories, you know, take risks.
Yeah. And is there any other scent that you think you would never ever work with that perhaps, you know, the next perfumer could come along and say, okay, we have to try this?
maybe. The perfume is always about, I mean, creation today. You can see it in painting, you can see it in sculpture. It's all about revisiting the past.
Yes.
You know, you deconstruct and you reconstruct. So perfume is all about that. So it's always interesting to take all the archetypes and try to make them contemporary, relevant today. It's not easy. Believe me, it's not easy.
No. Nothing sounds easy about the process, but very worthwhile. And when you say that Angel Share is probably your most successful scent to date, I mean, we have to talk about Love Don't Be Shy, because that, like, people went crazy for that. The wait lists were off the charts. What was it like when all that happened?
So that's, and Love Don't Be Shy is one of the six scents that I launched 13 years ago. And it has always been a very successful scent. But then, you know, you launch new perfumes, and little by little, you know, the old ones, they start to be a little bit less important. But it's easy to Google, because the media, I mean, for the last 2 years, they haven't stopped talking about it, because, you know, I think it was the Huffington Post who started to do an article, and they wanted to see what were the most, the celebrities who smelled the best.
Yes.
And everybody said, it's Rihanna. Rihanna is the celebrity who smells the best. So this journalist started to do an investigation about what is the real perfume that Rihanna wears. And after doing a little bit of research, and videos have been posted, because there's her artistic director posted a video at a concert revealing the name and so on. And everybody knew that it was Love Don't Be Shy. So since 2 years, we cannot keep stock. I mean, it's insane. We just can't keep stock.
That's amazing. And thousands of people on the wait list. I think it's just incredible. But I also think it's amazing that, you know, she is renowned for her scent. That's an unusual thing. We talk about how somebody looks. We talk about, you know, how they act, how they sing, everything. But, you know, scent isn't something we frequently discuss when we're discussing people. And I think that that's something that has been important to you, trying to create the visibility of scent.
Well, yes, because if you observe the way we all are, you realize that we are all on our phones.
Yes.
All on social media. And we are all on a tool which is all about visibility, you know, visibility to the clothes you wear, the shoes you wear, the bags you wear, the jewelry you wear, the makeup. So you can actually, people, celebrities, tag every accessory possible, every fashion brand possible. The one thing they cannot tag, simply because it's invisible, it's perfume. which is it's difficult in the way in the world we live in, because how do you build a brand in a world where the only thing that matters is what's visible?
Mm-hmm.
So that was tricky, you know, like 12, 13 years ago when I started thinking about how am I going to emerge? How am I going to give visibility to a brand that by essence, no pun intended, is invisible? So that's why I had the idea of putting every bottle into a clutch, and the clutch would help me to tell the story I'm trying to convey. So, for example, for the collection in the Garden of Good and Evil with Good Girl Gone Bad, I put the white bottle in a white aluminium clutch with a snake that was gold with a Swarovski crystal for the eyes. So the snake was almost like a piece of jewelry protecting or ready to bite the person who was getting close to the clutch.
That's amazing.
So the idea that I had was, well, if a woman goes out at night wearing my clutch, then she must be wearing the perfume. But at minimum, when she was tagging her bag, she was tagging my brand. So it was a way for me to get visibility.
That's incredible. As you say, like, we can appreciate everything, even down to tagging our makeup and the lipstick that we wear. Like, it is all visible. Perfume is just that invisible accessory that we have.
The only one, yeah.
So you've developed upon that, and your packaging is, you know, I wish this was a visible medium and people could see how beautiful your packaging is, because it's second to none. There's so much work that goes into the design concepts of your perfumes. How much do you enjoy that aspect of the creation?
I love that. I mean, I love every part.
Yeah.
The part that where I am the less comfortable, should I say, is the image.
Okay.
What is the image that's going to encapsulate the spirit of a collection? That's the part where it's the trickiest, because you choose models, you never know how the models are going to react at the shoot, what they're going to give you, what emotion they're going to transmit. So that's always the part that I'm always scared about.
Yeah,
but lately, I mean, for the last 2 years now, we have the chance to have Ellen Bonenvers creating all our images, and mm-hmm. I must say, such a pleasure working with her. And and at the end, the images are fantastic, because she has such an energy during the shooting, and she gets the girl to do amazing fun stuff. And the brand, I want a brand that is really that feels luxurious. But at the same time, I want a brand that feels playful, you know, because I feel that it's beauty. It's not brain surgery. You know, we're not saving lives. We're just here to bring a bit of pleasure in people's lives.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you're doing more than that, because I think it's really important. You know, look, every brand we speak to on this podcast is mindful of sustainability, and it's something that is only increasingly so. However, when you launched 13 years ago, before this conversation was really, really had the energy that it does now, sustainability was at the forefront of your model, and you were very conscious of this. Tell us about your approach to sustainability within the business.
Well, 13 years ago, the idea was that true luxury should not be disposable, and real luxury should lead the way on items that people want to keep forever. And obviously, if there is a brand with products that you keep, then there is no waste, then it's the most sustainable brand ever. So how can I give a reason to customers to keep everything I create? So that's why all my cases, my clutches, the inside is removable so you can reuse them. The bottles, the pump, you can unscrew the pump so you can refill the bottle. Back then I was trying to give a reason to customers not to throw anything and to keep it and refill it for half the price. Today, I'm really going much further. I would like to have a much more avant-garde approach. So for example, we have redesigned all our outer packaging to be much closer to the bottle. So less paper used. The new collection that we have created that includes Angel Share, every item is produced in Europe in order to reduce as maximum our carbon footprint. No planes are taken to supply components. So you know, we try to move in the right direction, and we're actually going to take strong commitments with the that we're going to give to the customer for our next 5 years, and this is what I commit that I will take the brand to. But to be honest, I would love for suppliers to be even more proactive. You know, for example, I would love to be able to use recycled carton, but the options that we have available are so limited that it doesn't allow to create things that would look luxurious. You know, easier if you do craft like product, it's easier to be much more sustainable. When you're doing real luxury, sometimes you're heading into a wall, but I feel that suppliers just need to. I'm sure that this is the direction they're going, and at one point we will all be. I mean, at least at Killian, we will be using carton that comes from that is already recycled.
Do you feel that they are going in that direction? Do you see the change happening, albeit slowly?
Slowly, I would say slowly.
Okay. But it's great. I mean, I think it also has allowed you to create something a little more special in the packaging. And, you know, Christmas is around the corner, and I can't think of anything nicer to open than, you know, a Killian Paris bottle, because they are really beautiful. But the fact that they're refillable, then it seems like it has allowed you to be a little bit more extravagant in the creation of your packaging, because we're going to keep it.
For the bottle, for sure.
Yeah.
The bottle, I can use whatever material, glass, you know, because it's not meant to be thrown away. You know, you are keeping it forever. So that is a different logic than the outer packaging, which I know the customer doesn't keep and throws. And it's on that part that I would like to be making even bigger efforts.
And so I mentioned Christmas, Killian, and it's around the corner. If somebody is hoping to enter the world of Killian Paris, what are the universal pleasers? What are the scents that you believe work for most people?
Well, we have done what we call the icon sets. So on our most iconic scents, which are Good Girl Gone Bad for women, Straight to Heaven and Black Phantom for men, Moonlight in Heaven is very unisex. Rolling in Love, very unisex. And on those five scents, we have done a set where you in the set, you have the 50 ml, the refillable 50 ml bottle, and a travel spray that goes with it that is also refillable. We have really fun offers for Christmas this year.
And they're all in Brent Thomas, which is really exciting.
Absolutely.
As well. So look, it's amazing to speak to you. And I mean, it's great to meet the man behind these beautiful scents. And thank you so much for your time
today.
No,
it was a pleasure.
Lovely to talk to you.
And I can't wait to actually be back in Ireland at Brent Thomas for a real PA and meeting everyone.
Yes, coming home. That's what we can call.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Killian.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Thomas podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and share, and follow us on Official Brand Thomas on Instagram for more updates.